prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will let mine be done. So what we're looking at today, we're going to be looking at the fourth step, and specifically, it's the last column of the fourth step, really, in terms of how it gets you connected up with the eighth and ninth step. Because one of the things the big book tells us, and I think it's very exciting in CEA How that we're putting together a booklet of questions that's dealing with working the steps from the big book. Because I really enjoy the big book. And I'm in this program, and then I'm also in the mother program as well. So I got introduced to this many, many years ago. And just really love it as the primary source material, quite frankly, of all 12-step programs. Even predating the 12 and 12 by 13 years. So what it says, one of the things it says in reference to the eighth step in the big book is it says, you made your eight-step list, we made our eight-step list when we took our four-step. So the communication is then, every name that ended up on my four-step is also going to be on my eight-step list. And this was really interesting for me because I had some pretty significant heavy hitters on my four-step, right? I was molested as a kid. So let's just call him Joe. Right, so I resent Joe for having molested me when I was 7. Affects me in all the various areas, right? And then I had to find my part. Now, what's interesting, we always talk, you hear people in conversation, indeed, I think we actually had a workshop about it this weekend, talking about the fourth column of the big book. And it's really interesting because the reality is, in terms of where the big book information, fourth step is listed in the big book, there's nothing about a fourth column, right? It literally has the I'm resentful at the cause affects my. Where it talks about the fourth column is in the prose that follows, right? So it's interesting. So we always talk about those four columns, but the reality is it only gets talked about. But it's good because that's a really important piece of the puzzle to get, right? Is where is it showing up that I'm resentful, selfish, fearful, right? Looking at that, where am I resentful, selfish, and fearful? And then when you add when you're looking at the, because there are three parts of the big book four step, when you add the sex inventory part, it adds inconsiderate for the fourth column, right? Was I just generally inconsiderate? But again, so you're looking at those things for that fourth column. Where am I still resentful, selfish, dishonest, and fearful? Actually, it's four things. Resentful, selfish, dishonest, and fearful. So then what it tells me then, if I'm taking all those names, because again, it says I made my eight-step list when I took my four-step, well, all of a sudden what that means is I have some amends to make. Well, how is that possible that I owe an amends to somebody who molested me when I was 7 years old? He was a family friend. But then what was pointed out to me, and this changed my life, and this is what we're going to talk about today. And if anybody is struggling with forgiving someone, we can do a really interesting exercise. I've done this before when I've led workshops and done different things, weekend things, actually. But what was pointed out to me by my sponsor, and this changed my life. Welcome. Glad you're here. What changed my life is that I'm certainly not responsible for the fact that somebody molested me when I was 7 years old, right? And that person's name ended up on my four-step list. But if I haven't forgiven that person for many, many years, well, I have some responsibility there, right? That's something I owe an amends for. Now, also, as my sponsor clarified to me, right, I don't need to call or contact or write letters that I am going to send to anybody who molested me. I don't. But I do need to write a letter, and we'll talk about that because this is about the ninth step. I do need to write a letter and either send it to myself or send it to my sponsor and make sure I get it out in the universe, and I need to forgive that person, right? So that I have to do. So that's what we're going to be talking about, but that's the connection between the fourth step and the ninth step, right? Because we always kind of laugh and talk about how the sixth and seventh step only get two paragraphs. Again, if you're talking about working your steps from the big book, there's only two paragraphs on step six and seven. It's at the top of page 76. There's only five sentences on the eighth step. Because the list is the least interesting part of it. And again, if you're working your steps from the big book, you've already made your eight-step list when you took your four-step. So then the rest of the pages are all talking about between 76 and 84 are talking about how it is we get ourselves ready to do that nine-step. And the communication comes in various ways and in various levels of directness, but it basically says, if you want to get free here, this is what you have to do. And so that was a real game changer for me. And the specific direction that I'd gotten from my sponsor is that I needed to write a letter. And this letter needed to have three parts to it. So again, I'm talking about Joe, just for some of my people who just came in here. I'm talking about Joe, who molested me when I was seven, right? And he's on my four-step list because I had a resentment, and I'd carried around 65 extra pounds, right? My top weight was 200 pounds. And I'd carried around some pretty significant resentment around that. And there's also some question as to whether my brother had molested me as well. He molested my older sister. I certainly remember, you know, inappropriate encounters, but don't know if there was molestation there as well. But at any rate, you know, certainly had this resentment toward Joe, and then it was pointed out to me by my sponsor how I needed to take responsibility for the fact that I hadn't forgiven Joe for about 25 years. So she said, write a letter. And there are three parts to the letter, and it's very, very brief, right? Because again, the emphasis in the big book is less is more. That is, I want to get away from the story. So this is not a long letter. This is not the same kind of letter that I would write to my mother or sisters or things like that. We'll talk about all that. But this is the very, very brief one. If anybody else like me, and the statistic is daunting in terms of how many people with dealing with eating disorders have been molested. It's pretty overwhelming, actually. It's well over three quarters. I don't know, it's something over 75%, but I don't have the exact number, so I'm not going to throw anything out there. But three parts to the letter. So it goes, Dear Joe, I forgive you for having molested me when I was a kid, when I was 7 years old. So that's part one. I forgive you. Part two, please forgive me for not having forgiven you for having molested me when I was 7 years old. And then what she directed me to do is to write something nice about Joe. Because the problem is, when somebody's done something hurtful and horrible to us, I start seeing them through a prism, right? Everybody, take your hand like this and put it up in front of your eye, right? See how you can just see, right? It helps you to focus. Like, there's a woman in the back in a beautiful red top, and I can really focus on her because you don't have anything on the outside. But then when you take it away, all of a sudden I can see everything. Well, I saw Joe through that prism, right? Because that was what he had done to me. He did this to me. But then when I remember, the thing that I remembered about Joe, he was a family friend and he had a grocery store. And I was just thinking about him the other day because I came across, somehow I ended up with one of those wheat pennies. Remember the pennies in the back, right, that had the wheat leaves on the back? He used to save those pennies for me. So that was what I wrote, right? I wrote, and thank you for always saving those wheat pennies to me because you knew they were really important to me, right? And then she said, sign off as high as you can go. And there's nothing higher than love. So love, Sheila. So it went, Dear Joe, I forgive you for having molested me when I was 7 years old. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you for 25 years for having done that. Thank you for always saving those wheat pennies for me, Joe, because you knew they meant a lot to me. Love, Sheila. And then she directed me to actually make two copies. And I had to get a copy to her, and then I had to send a copy. She wanted me to circulate it through the universe. Plus, these days, it's a real assistance to the Postal Service, right? We got to keep them working. I love the Postal Service. So she said, put it in an envelope, right, sent to you from you, right, and get it circulated through the universe and then put it in your God box. So I had that in there for many years. You know, this was years ago. But I got to tell you, that changed my life. It really did. And my story was not that I came in and got abstinent right away. I so respect people. I was just chatting with this lovely woman who just came in April. And some people just come in and they're really settled and they get it right away. I was a slipper for, you know, for many years. I just wasn't ready to put the food down. I wasn't ready to feel the feelings, right? I just wasn't. And that's what it's about. It's not about the food or I can't, you know, I don't want to put this down or I don't want to stop eating, whatever. It's never about that. It's about, do you want to feel the feelings? So just taking the actions was amazing. It was all part of the piece of the puzzle for me to get ready to really let go of the excess weight, which I thought was serving as a defense, but was not. But I didn't know that at the time. You don't know it until it's gone. But then I was really ready to feel the feelings. So taking the actions, despite the fact I'm not ready to let go of the food and feel the feelings, was a really good exercise for me. But I got to tell you, this really changed my life. Everything in my life started shifting when I did this, when I was willing to do this work. And I've just always been, you know, pretty good. I should be careful because my sponsor's in the room. I was just about to say, I'm always really good about taking sponsor direction, but actually there's something just came, you know, became clear to us in the last couple of days, right? So it's all a process. But at any rate, so that's what we're talking about. So I started with the big gun in terms of, and we already lost one person. So I wanted to start with the big gun because I wanted to tell you, this is what we're going to be talking about. Now, we don't have to talk about heavy stuff like that. But what I was wondering is if anybody, and we're going to leave a half an hour at the end, if anybody, you know, we want to do any Q&A, and I can certainly weigh in, or if anybody in the room has insight and they'd like to weigh in on a Q&A, because the reality is we're all just supporting and helping each other with this. But the deal is, the magic is about the four step and taking it to the ninth step. And if you get nothing else from this, get this. If you are at all interested in what the primary source material says, it says that everybody who ended up on your four step ends up on your eight step list. What that does, it's doing something really profound. It's taking me out of the role of victim. Because the only place of power that I ever have in my life is when I'm willing to raise my hand and take some measure of responsibility, right? Now, quite obviously, I get it. I mean, in the other program, I've led big meetings and I've shared this and I've had people stand up and really get angry and leave the meeting, one woman in particular. And I understand that, right? This is potent stuff when you start talking about molestation. It's a big deal. I got that. In no way am I saying, quite obviously, I wasn't responsible in any way when I'm 7 years old. But where I have the responsibility, right, is as somebody who qualifies for this 12-step program and any other, there is a personality type. And part of that personality type, why resentment is talked about so much in this book, because resentment is just a $2 word for I don't forgive you, right? That's all resentment is. That's why they say resentment is poisonous and it's going to kill you. Because what it is the lack of forgiveness. Because when you think about it, what does the whole program boil down to? Three things: love and forgiveness and service. I mean, Bob referenced that on his deathbed to Bill, you know, let's not muck this thing up. It's about love and service. The reality is it's about love and forgiveness and service, right? So if the idea that everything emanated from this means something to you, just know that whoever you're angry at, whoever you can't forgive, which is why they ended up on a four-step, if you haven't forgiven them, you've become part of the problem. So what happens when we actually take whatever direction we're given from our sponsor regarding a ninth step, it's unhooking me. See, Joe was gone a long time ago. He was gone a long time ago. He died a long time ago. But I was hooked. And not only was I hooked, but every man I was ever in a relationship with got affected by Joe's behavior. Isn't that interesting to think about that? Kind of the spider web thing, right? So this happened over here in, what, I'm 50 years old, so it happened in 1970. All of a sudden, my last boyfriend, well, my husband certainly was affected, but even the boyfriend I had before my husband. So then somebody, you know, 30 years later in 1992, my boyfriend in 1992, is paying the price for something that happened almost 30 years, well, I guess no, 23 years before I was born, 30 years before. But isn't that interesting to think? That's why I have such a responsibility, I believe, to really deal with this stuff. Because it's not like it's just me and Joe. It's everybody I come in contact with. And it's not just people I end up in a relationship with either. Because once in a while, right? Because we all kind of look alike, right? We're all connected. But once in a while, you'll see somebody who looks like somebody who did something wrong to you, somebody who done you wrong, and all of a sudden some poor schlub in Target is getting a bad attitude from me because he looks like, you know, the kid who used to tease me about my weight in high school, right, and make fun of me. Brian Hagedon, right? Don't worry, fake name. But I mean, that's why I have such a responsibility with this, to really make sure I clean this up. Because if I'm not forgiving you and you did something legitimately wrong, I'm going to pay. That person pays. And everybody, quite frankly, it doesn't even matter if anybody looks like me, right? Because if I'm in a bad mood, you all pay, right? If I'm not late, everybody's driving fine. Isn't that interesting, right? So if it's that small and it can happen with something like that, imagine how it happens if somebody really hurt me and created some real distress in my life, okay? So that's a big one. Does anybody have any questions now before we kind of move on to something else? Anything about this? Raise your hand if you've done a four-step. Okay. All right. Okay, so we just have a couple of people who haven't done a four-step yet. Okay. The other big one that showed up for me and shows up for people that I sponsor is, other than the molestation, which happens, it's interesting, because 95% of the people that I sponsor, 95% of the people that I sponsor have been molested. I mean, it's just uncanny, right? Water rises to its own level. And it's good, because they've found a good person. They've found the right person when they find me and we work together. Because I can certainly understand and I can be there and I know how to hold somebody's hand, whether if it's a bridge sponsorship situation, I know how to do that across the phone line and in a real loving way and just let somebody know it's safe in the world. But just how to get through this process. But the other big thing that shows up is people who have issues with their mother, right? Because that's the other big thing that I've found. Kind of molestation and mothers, right? I actually am working on a project around these M's. There's a couple more, but we'll just stay with those. And I had really struggled with my mother for a lifetime. I really had. My mother was, neither of my parents were alcoholics, but the reality is I came from an alcoholic home in that I was a grandchild of alcoholics. Both of my grandfathers, maternal and paternal, were alcoholics. And my father's alcoholic dad was the kind of alcoholic who would come home and pass out, right? And they'd grown up in real poverty. My father grew up in Flint, Michigan. As a matter of fact, they were one of only a few white families in a predominantly African-American neighborhood in Flint, Michigan. And but it was cool in that regard in that my father was very evolved regarding race relations from when he was young because he had so much experience with it, having grown up in Flint. But they grew up in real poverty, and his father was a butcher. And that was the only reason, actually, that they didn't routinely go hungry. But it was a very difficult home. And while it sounds, you know, somewhat tame to have an alcoholic parent who comes home and passes out, I do know that my grandmother and my grandparents were people who directly, got off the boat from what was then Czechoslovakia. It couldn't have been too easy because my grandmother left the home for 5 years. So my father had an older sibling who was a sister, and she was so distressed about this alcoholic father and a mother leaving for 5 years. And this was when the kids were small. That she went and joined the nunnery at 14. They don't let you do that anymore. But that's how distressing and how difficult it was. And that was the parent of mine who had it easy with the alcoholic parent, because my mother's situation was much different. Her father was a violent alcoholic. So he was the kind of alcoholic who, he wasn't even just a child beater. He was a beater upper, right? So he was horrendously violent with the children. And my mother was the oldest, and she had a brother 2 years younger than her. And then about 10 years later, my grandparents had two more children. So there were four children in their family. But the two oldest kids got it the worst. And there is no way to measure woundedness, but you do carry the wounds differently if you're a young girl getting beaten by your father than you do if you're a boy, just in terms of the woundedness. And perhaps the greater question, why are you hurting me? This is such an unfair fight, you know. And my mother was just really, she was really a wounded bird, and she carried it for a lifetime. And so I had a lot of anger toward my mother. I really did. She was so unavailable in such a significant way. And it had gotten to the point, right, because I'd come in the other program, and then I was in this program, and I'd started in the other food program, even predating this one. And, you know, just as I said, I wasn't ready to feel the feelings. I wasn't ready to put the food down. It was serving a purpose for me, certainly. I did not know how to feel. It did not feel safe in the world. But I certainly had been here. I'd been sober for 26 years. And so I was doing the deal, and I came from Michigan. And in Michigan, we were largely influenced by the Alcoholics Anonymous of Dr. Bob in Ohio. So that their theory was is that you just keep cycling through the steps over and over again, as opposed to the New York group, Bill's group, who believed that you went through the steps one time and then you cycled through, you know, 10, 11, and 12 for the rest of your life. But you don't, their theory is you don't necessarily have to work the steps more than once. But again, not where I came from and not what I even at all remotely believe. I love cycling through the steps over and over and over again. But I certainly had been, you know, exposed to things in terms of, you know, my mother ended up very significantly on four steps, quite obviously. And again, because I've done, you know, probably I'm in the other program as well, the family group program that assists people. I've done probably 35 four steps. But I did a whole four step on my mother at one point. But it was a real process to forgive my mother. I mean, that took years, right? And where it finally all kind of bloomed for me in a pretty significant way is I got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was 30 years old. So this was in 1994. I got an MS diagnosis on March 1st, 1994. And This was a big deal because for two reasons. I was actually working for a family where the mother was very debilitated with MS, and I was working as a nanny. I was paying off student loans here in Los Angeles. Again, I'm originally from Michigan, and she was quite debilitated. It was a very wealthy family, and the father was a psychiatrist, and the mother was very debilitated with MS, and I'd been working for them for a year when I also got diagnosed. And, you know, bravo for life's little ironies. MS is not something that is contagious, quite obviously. But even more significant than that is I had an aunt who, 25 years before, I'm not sure of the numbers here, I think at 20, had died of MS, 25, had died of MS complications. And it was a big deal in our family. So remember I talked about my mother's three siblings, right? She was the oldest of four. This was the youngest child in the family. And she had gotten diagnosed and then was pregnant and wasn't married to the man who'd impregnated her, and he left her. And then she bore the child, and when she was 5 years old, she ended up dying of MS complications. And my grandmother, right, my mother's mother, ended up, who I'm named after, that will be another interesting, if we have time, we'll get to that story, whom I'm named after, ended up raising this kid. So again, MS had a big, big presence in our family, a really big presence in our family. And so I got diagnosed, and yet I was 30 years old, and I had, you know, I'd been sober for 5, 6 years at that time, but still had not worked everything out with my mother and my family at all. And I remember, because again, having working for this psychiatrist family, and he was asking me, you know, this was like within a day or two of me being diagnosed, how, you know, my parents had responded in the conversation. And I said, oh, well, I didn't tell my parents that I was diagnosed. And he said, Sheila, why not? I said, well, I don't want to have that conversation. I just don't. It's not going to have any effect on them. They're not going to have any conversation with me about it, because that was always the way it was, right? My mother was always the one who sent birthday cards and stuff, and my dad just, you know, worked like a dog, and just, you know, he was a compulsive worker, and he just didn't emotionally ever feel anything. My mother was supposedly the one who felt stuff emotionally, and she felt nothing, right? She was 100 pounds overweight. She felt nothing because she was still working on her own pain from her own childhood, right? I said, I don't want to tell them. They're not going to have any reaction, and that's going to hurt too much. And he said, Sheila, really, come on. You got to tell your parents. And I said, no, I actually don't. With all due respect, you know, this is really my business, and I'm not going to tell my parents. Well, there was some, I don't know how, I must have given it to my sister. I'd given the work number, so this family's home, to my sister, and so my mother ended up calling the work home, the place where I worked, and the mother in this job that I was in, who was debilitated with MS herself, ended up telling my mother that I'd been diagnosed with MS within, you know, 3 or 4 days of the diagnosis. And I was furious, of course. But I got on the phone with my parents. I don't think they were sophisticated enough to both be on the phone at the same time, so it was probably the handoff. And I told both of them. So this was in March of 1994. And for the next, let me think, so my mom died and dad died. For the next dozen years, 15 years, I never, ever, ever got a phone call from my mother or my father or anybody else in my family about what had happened to me. And that's the kind of family I grew up in, right? That's what I grew up in. I got married 3.5 years ago for the first time, all right? I was 46. My husband was 54, you know, it was a first marriage for both of us. Nobody from my immediate family came to my wedding. And it's not like my siblings live in Asia. They live in Texas and Michigan, right? That's just part of my pain and woundedness. But what I don't want to do, right? I don't want to carry that with me. And I don't want to punish you or you or you, because I came from that kind of a family. And if I don't do this work, that's what will happen, right? So at any rate, so that was the template for the relationship that I had with my family. But it particularly felt the worst. It's not fair to mommies. But the reality is, if a mommy and daddy both do something, I'm going to be angrier at the mommy, because she is the woman who bore me, right? I did travel through your canal, right? So there's something particularly relevant when she's not showing up. And it devolved to the point where my mother and I were talking twice a year. I'd call her 2 times a year. I'd call her on her birthday, and I'd call her on Mother's Day. And I'd pray for the answering machine both times so I could just leave a message. And then, right? Responsibility was hers if, when she wanted to call back, which most of the time she did not. And I was still struggling with this. So despite the fact I was working this program, I was working this one to the best of my ability, getting some time, losing it, getting time, losing it, getting time, losing it, I still wasn't obviously complete with my mother in terms of not being able to connect with her. And what was going on in terms of my career is I was in the running for this big contest, this big writing contest, right? I'm an artist type. And I really wanted to win this contest. So I went and I saw somebody from my church to pray for me, right? And I wanted to pray to win this contest, yes? And it ended up coming out in the story that I had this real anger with my mother. I wanted to win this contest, and I also was starting to have problems with MS. And I was lucky. I'm one of the lucky ones. I haven't had any significant problems, and I'm not going to have any significant problems. I truly am very, very fortunate in that regard. But I was starting to, at this period of time, I was starting to have some real problems. So I wanted to win the contest, and I wanted to be better in terms of my health, right? And so I went and I saw somebody to pray for me, do the deal, hocus pocus, whatever it is, right? God is good, you know, I got all that stuff. Let's bring on the solution, right? And it ended up coming out in this communication with this person who was praying for me that I didn't forgive my mother, that I was angry at my mother. And the person was trying to connect the dots between my not forgiving my mother and my health issues. The wanting to win the contest, we quickly and very appropriately put that one aside, right? But that there was a connection between me not forgiving my mother and my health issues that I was experiencing. And I poo-pooed that idea. No, that's silly. Stop that conversation immediately, right? Let me take you through this again, right? I want to win the contest, and yeah, I want my health back where it belongs. I want to be feeling good in my body. And again, this person tried to connect my mother and my health issue. And I said, finally I leaned in and I said, come on in, ladies, welcome. I said, that's absolutely ridiculous. There is no connection between me not forgiving my mother and my health issues. My mother has nothing to do with my health issues. And I remember this woman leaned in. She was this beautiful African-American woman. And she leaned in. She got real close to my face, right? And she said, Sheila, I'm here to tell you that you're not forgiving your mother has everything to do with your health issue. Everything. And I heard her, right? And for the next year, she and I worked together, right? She would pray with me and kind of do the things that she did in terms of her spiritual practice and taught me what she could teach me, right? And it was a wonderful, valuable thing. There is nothing more valuable to me than what happens here, but this was just priming me so that I could sit down and have a conversation with her. There are certainly lots of wonderful ways to have a spiritual experience in the world, right? I'm not somebody who ever says any 12-step program is the last house on the block. There are many houses on the block. There are many mansions, right, in God's realm. So this is just where I fit, right? This is where I've found my spiritual path. But so this woman, let's just call her Linda. Linda was very, very helpful for me over the next year. And I do remember at one point when she, I was probably the next week, when she said, you know, because it finally became clear, I got it, that there was a connection between me not forgiving my mother. Remember, resentment just means I don't forgive you. And this was with me having done lots of work, but this is a process to forgive a mother. I could forgive Joe, the guy who molested me, in a conversation and then doing the work. But my mother, that took years, right? So at any rate, I came the next week, sat down with Linda, and she said, okay, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about this real anger with your mother. Because at this point, I'd had the diagnosis for 7 or 8 years. And again, remember, got diagnosed, my mother's sister had died of this 20 years before, big deal in our family. I've now been diagnosed for 7 or 8 years. Nobody from my family ever picked up the phone and said, how are you doing? When my dad got on the phone, he would say, how's your health? And I'd say, I'm okay, I'm fine. And then we were off the subject. But when he put my mother on the phone, she would never even ask about my health, ever, right? So when Linda finally asked about that, I thought, okay, well, now I'm going to prove to her, right, that this is a legitimate anger that I have toward this witch, right, my mother, and that I'm fine, let me off the hook, and let's figure out another way to do this. But this is what she did to me. This is how bad she is. So I went through the whole story and I told Linda, because I actually also told her, I said I had been to the MS Society and I told a social worker this story and she couldn't believe it. And she said, wow, you know, and you have to work really hard to shock a social worker, especially in a big city, right? You do. And she said, gosh, I've been with the MS Society for about 25 years. I've never heard a story like that, you know? So, I mean, I had an arsenal. And all you have to do is tell this story, and it's easy to get a bunch of people behind me who'll hold my hand and glare at my mother with me, right? Right? Especially if somebody's got a health issue, right? They're gonna be part of the team, part of the posse, right? So I was trying to get trying to get Linda on board with us, and I told her the whole story, and my mother, and I kind of finished with that flourish, and my mother has never called me and never asked about it, right? Hands on my hips, practically, right? Metaphorically. And Linda sat back, and again, just this wise, beautiful woman, and she said, "Wow, are you ever lucky?" I said, "Lucky? What? What do you mean? What do you mean?" And she again leaned in. She would always lean in. And she said, "If you had finally gotten the love from your mother that you'd been trying to get from her for a lifetime behind getting diagnosed with MS, do you realize how motivated you would have been to get really sick?" And I knew exactly what she meant. You got it. Yeah. I knew exactly what she meant. And she was absolutely right. I'd been trying to get my mother's love for a lifetime, right? I had been trying to get my mother's love for a lifetime. I couldn't get it. But if all of a sudden something bad happens to me, and all of a sudden I start getting my mother's love, well, what if I get really bad, right? And that's the interesting thing about something like MS, right? You can have some various bad things happen to you, as my mother had witnessed with her own sister, and we'd witnessed in our family, you know, blindness, paralysis, things like that. So gosh, if you know, getting diagnosed finally got my mom's attention, what will happen if I go blind? You know, maybe she'll fly out here and stay with me, right? Maybe she'll insist that I move home, that I move into their home, right? But none of that happened. So when Linda made that connection that I was really lucky, that I never got, there was no juice in my family behind my getting diagnosed, right? Do you see how this whole process is about how we look at things? See, that's what happens when I do the work. So in making that connection between a fourth step and a ninth step, taking myself out of the role of victim, because that's what the fourth column does, is I look at my part. Again, where am I selfish, dishonest, and fearful? And it talks about resentment too, but the whole gig, you know, the whole gig of a four-step is resentment. So let's just keep it on where am I fearful, selfish, and dishonest. So despite the fact either legitimately where somebody has done something to me, because there are certainly things that I resented people and they'd done the doing, right? Like the molestation and things. But there were also places where I resented myself because I'd done hurtful things to people. I mean, it was just, it's a whole beautiful weave of a gorgeous oriental rug in terms of a four-step, if it's done well, right? There are people that I hurt, people that hurt me, you know, whatever it was. At least it was for me in my life. But when I'm looking at my part, where am I still carrying, where was I selfish, dishonest, and fearful? And again, I don't want to spend too much time on this because this is ninth step, not four-step. But the reality is, for me to carry a grudge for 25 years about somebody who molested me, the reality is that's selfish. Why is it selfish? Because it's all about me and my pain. It's all about me and my pain, don't you know? Don't you know what I bet? Nobody came to my wedding. Don't you know? Right? Nobody called me about MS. Don't you know? Let's sit down and talk about my pain, right? That's how I lived my life. That's what I'm doing when I'm carrying that kind of stuff in a sack on my back. I'll tell you, the weight that I carried on my body, the extra 65 pounds I used to carry, that was nothing compared to the weight that I carried of not forgiving you. Right? So that's selfish. Where is it dishonest? Well, I've never molested a child. Never done that. But I've done hurtful things to people. I feel quite sure I've been on people's four steps. If anybody in my family besides me ever, you know, chose to darken the doors of a 12-step program, I'd be on their four step, but they don't do it. Nobody comes. Nobody in my family comes to 12-step programs. Yet they all qualify, right? They all qualify for the family group, you know, for the Al-Anon program, because I'm an alcoholic, if nothing else. And they all know it, because I write it on my holiday letter every year, how long I've been sober, right? So, right? Because it's not going out to the press, radio, and film. I think it should. It's very well written. that's just where it is. But let's look at what that unforgiveness is really about. What I'm really doing is not forgiving people who couldn't do anything other than what they did. right? They just couldn't do anything other than what they did. So it's dishonest for me to not forgive somebody who did something hurtful, because the reality is I've done hurtful things to people. We don't have to compare notes, right? Doesn't matter that you did this and I did that. The deal is, if I want to be free and I want to be forgiven by you, by me, by the God of my understanding, well, then I got to give it, right? I have to be part of that process for you. As a wise sponsor taught me years ago, I can worship any God I want to. You know, we get to choose a God of our own understanding here. I can worship any God I want to, as long as I'm willing to emulate that God, right? Because if the deal is, I want a God, which I do, what I believe is that everybody's forgiven of everything, right? That's what I believe. There are no demerits. Nobody's relegated to eternal damnation or anything like that. I just don't subscribe to that. I just don't. My God's bigger than that. And I can worship that. I can believe in that. I can practice that. I can revel in that. But then I got to practice it with you. So if I believe in a God that forgives everybody of everything all the time, then as the minister from my church says, forgive everybody of everything all the time. That's how you get free. Well, then that's what I get to practice out in the world, right? And then fearful. It's easy to see where it's fearful if I have somebody who's still showing up on a resentment, on a four-step, right? That's all about fear. I'm afraid of letting it go. I'm afraid of letting somebody off the hook, as if I was ever letting Joe off the hook anyway. Let me tell you something. If somebody's on your four-step list, right, and then they end up on that eight-step list, and you got to do the work to forgive them, and you feel resentful about that, that person isn't on the hook anyway. They were never on the hook. They didn't have a problem with the behavior. That's why they did it. They didn't have a problem with it. Joe didn't have a problem with molestation and molesting kids. That's why he did it. What I do know is that it comes from woundedness. People who feel good about themselves don't hurt other people. They certainly don't molest children. You know? So if I'm not forgiving somebody, so again, somebody ends up on the eight-step list, and then I'm doing that concrete work, which is what the ninth step work is about. It is forgiveness in action. It is concrete work. What I'm really doing, I'm doing a few different things, right? Since that person wasn't on the hook, but we know someone's on the hook, and I'm the one who wrote the four step, probably I'm the one on the hook. So what I'm doing is I'm letting myself off the hook. And I'm also bringing the point home to me in a wonderful, spiritual, evolved way, in a really whole, perfect, and complete way. I'm really bringing it home that the things they did that were hurtful, the things in my life that I did that were hurtful, I couldn't have done anything else. I didn't know how to do any better. I didn't know how to do any better. I really didn't. When we know better, we do better. And I don't, just like I talked about with my family, right, in terms of the wedding, which just, you know, again, happened 3.5 years ago, that I still find myself kind of not angry and resentful toward him, but I just kind of shake my head, and once in a while I'll tell somebody that story, and they're so shocked. You know, they're just shocked. But what I know about my family is they couldn't do anything different. They couldn't do anything different. And when I'm living from that place, I mean, you can hear it in my voice, the softness. And I did not come from a family. I do not come to this kind of softness naturally. I don't. It was a war zone in my house. My husband always talks about, you know, I was like, I grew up like a wolf cub, right? It was like a wolf den in my home. It was, you were on the defensive all the time, right? Yeah, I mean, on the offensive, really, but everybody was walking around so defended. I always tell them, I said, are you kidding? I would have done better in a wolf den, you know, with a wolf mother. At least a she-wolf is going to, she's going to watch her young. She's going to take care of her young. My mother didn't do that. She couldn't do that, right? But she couldn't do it because she didn't have it. She didn't have it in her bag. So when I finally, through the layers and layers and layers of four steps, then getting connected up with whatever process of forgiveness I was going to be doing with my mother on that particular run with that particular sponsor, right, because it was this real process, it finally came together for me, and I got it. And I could hear what my sponsor finally said to me one time. Your mother didn't have it in her bag, right? It would be like if my mother, you know, we don't talk food items, so this is really not as fun, but it would be if I wanted my mother to make me a savory dish, but she came home with the things in a bag for a sweet dish, and I keep saying, pull out the this, or pull out, let's say this, let's do it this way. Let's say I wanted my mother to build me a table, right? And so she comes in with the supplies, and I want her to build me a table. But what she has is the makings for stuff she needs to crochet an afghan. And I keep saying, come on, where's the wood? Where's the saw? Where's the hammer and the nails? And she's pulling out the crochet needle and the, you know, the beautiful yarn and the this. And I'm saying, the table, a table. And she says, I've got, you know, here's the... I'm crocheting you an afghan, right? She didn't have it in her bag. My mother did not have it in her bag. My mother didn't do it to me by not calling me for years about a diagnosis. She didn't have it in her bag. She did not have it in her bag. And when I finally made that connection and I could unhook and release her, through, again, years and years of four steps, eight-step lists, because I made the four-step, and then ninth-step concrete direction, again, whatever my sponsor was directing me to do in terms of the step work, it all finally coalesced into me randomly calling my mother one day, and it wasn't her birthday, and it wasn't Mother's Day, and my mother and I had the conversation I thought we'd have to be in heaven to have one day. It was a three-hour conversation. My father had died 6 years before. My mother was remarried. And I couldn't believe this conversation she and I had. She took responsibility for everything. And so I got to ask her about this. Why did you never contact me and call me about the MS when I got diagnosed with MS? And she was just sobbing. And she said, I couldn't take another kid blaming me for an autoimmune diagnosis. My brother had been diagnosed with diabetes. When he was 15 years old, he was my oldest sibling, and he died. He predicted his demise for the next 20 years, again, stepping into that victim role because my brother, like me, was an addict type, right? We do the victim thing very, very well, right? I always kind of say this about chronic slippers. Chronic slippers are chronic liars and chronic victims. The reality is we all got a little bit of that in us, right? Even if you came in here and kind of got the deal right away, right? It's right there, like just being a victim and... You know, let me just tell a little something, you know. But it definitely, you know, was a prevailing thing for me. But my brother had blamed my mother for the 20 years. Meanwhile, he's a diabetic who's smoking pot as well, and eating sugar. And his life fell apart 20 years later, right? I mean, through the process. It didn't happen 20 years later. It was a process, right? Because that's how it goes with diabetics, or can go that way, right? And my brother, you know, had a very difficult life, and he ended up losing both of his legs, and, you know, he was on dialysis the last 3 years, and then he went blind. And when he went blind, he said, I'm not living blind. Take me off dialysis. And he did, and he was, you know, he was gone 3 days later. But he blamed my mother for a lifetime about his diagnosis. And she said, I couldn't, because diabetes came from, you know, it showed up on her side of the family. And my aunt, having the MS diagnosis and having died years before, my mother thought I was going to blame her, right? But what my mother didn't know is that was never going to be part of the conversation between us, because I'd already had enough significant spiritual giants in terms of sponsorship, and just people I was listening to in the rooms had already gotten me had already gotten me and taken me into their embrace years before. My mother was never going to be. I was never going to use that as an ace card. But she didn't know that, right? She said, I thought you were going to blame me, and I could not take another kid blaming me. I said, oh, baby, that just was so not going to happen. I've called it a blessing right from, I was getting rolling out of the MRI machine, and I was praying to God and saying, you know what, whatever gets revealed here, I'm calling it a blessing. If you know, because what we say here, it's either true or it's not true, right? It's this stuff is either true or it's not true. What I always tell my sponsees is, don't put a bumper sticker on your car, a 12-step bumper sticker that you cannot live and embody, right? If you're still getting angry at drivers and flipping people off, don't put something indicating you're in a 12-step program on the back of your car, right? We're already losing people the world over. I've just learned, it was talked about, I guess, this past week with the delegates, that, you know, and it came up in reference to somebody from another fellowship who assists our fellowship, that numbers are down apparently in 12-step programs, you know, across the board. We're already losing people. Don't be a wingnut with a bumper sticker on the back of your car. But there's things like, let go, right? Let go, let God. Well, then do it. I mean, if I really believe this stuff is true, then it's all true, right? So my mother and I had that conversation, and it was all a result. It was a wonderful result of the work that I did with Linda, but Linda never would have been possible if I hadn't had this and the years and years of four steps, then taking me to an eight-step list that already got created when I made that four step, and then the concrete work that I did in a ninth step. So those were my big ones. Those were my big issues in terms of forgiveness. And like I said, it was much easier to forgive the guy that molested me than it was to forgive my mother. But I am so glad I did that, because 6 months later, my mother followed my brother. My mother had been diagnosed with diabetes. I've had two people in my immediate family die of diabetes. My brother died at 36. My mother died at 68. And she had been diagnosed with diabetes just 2 years before, and she was initially diagnosed with the one where she didn't have to take insulin. But my mother, like my brother, like me, also has the addiction here, right? They were diabetics, and they also were compulsive eaters with a horrendous, raging sugar addiction, right? And they could not put the sugar down. So my mother, it grew to the point where she had to be on insulin, and she died. She died in a hospital bed. Both of her legs had been amputated, and she was in a coma. And the only thing that was really sad is that, you know, I never had a chance. I was coming home. I had a niece and nephew graduating from high school, and in June of that year. So my mother and I had this reconciliation conversation in January. And then my mother started to have a lot of the feelings come up about the violent home she'd grown up in, and we had some wonderful conversations. I told her I would come home. Amazing. So my mother and I had that forgiveness conversation, right, in January of that year, 2004. And all of a sudden, I had my mother. I had my mother in a way that I'd never had her. I was then 41 years old, and I'd never had my mother, right? For a lifetime, I'd never had my mother. And we had some incredible conversations, just, you know, I'd never had access to my mother before, and all of a sudden now I had access to her. Why? Because my mother, who was not in a 12-step program, that's how I know this isn't the only way to live a spiritual, wonderful life. I don't know what happened for my mother, but her heart opened, and she took responsibility. She stopped being a victim, right? And she put herself out there, and we had this wonderful connection. And then 2 months later, my sister called me. And again, I'm the only one that goes to 12-step programs, but we've already established this isn't the only way to get spiritual and evolved and vulnerable, but it's a good way. And if you come from an alcoholic home, it's a really good way. And my sister called me, and she was panicked. So this is 2 months now. My mom and I have had this new, exciting relationship on the phone. She's in Michigan. I'm in California. My sister called me in a panic. She said, you got to do something. Mom's having all the memories come up from, you know, growing up and the violence and stuff. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Can you talk to her? Can you talk to her? So I call my mom, and my mother is crying on the phone because all the memories of that violent father right? All the beatings, the horrendous beatings, you know, and terrible stories. I mean, he didn't, again, if he gave you a belting, he did it when you were in a bathtub, so you had welts and stuff. There was one time my mother was supposed to go on a Girl Scout trip, a camping trip, and my grandma had to keep her home. She was so bruised and battered. And my mother would never talk about it in our family, right? It truly was the white elephant in the room, one of the many white elephants in the room. She was just saying, I don't understand why they're coming up now, why the feelings are coming up now, and I don't know what to do with this. And I started crying with her, and I said, you tell me what to do. You say the word, and I will come home. You say the word, and I will come. I will come, and I will sleep at the foot of your bed. I will be there. I will rub your back when you go to bed. I will be there when you wake up. I will take you to therapy. I will go to the therapy with you. I will do whatever you need. I will hold your hand and I will walk through this with you. I said, I think you're going to find that you're going to have to go through this. That's certainly what I've found in my own life. I have to go through the pain, but you will not go through this alone. You say the word, and I will come. And she wouldn't say the word. She wouldn't do it. And she kept eating the sugar, and she ended up in a diabetic coma. 3 days before I was going to be coming home for the celebrations with my niece and nephew. So she didn't get to be part of any of those celebrations. She was in a hospital bed. So I never had that experience of sitting like I do, you know, I've done with countless women all weekend, right? And I guess a man or two, but most of the women, and I've, you know, held their hands and, you know, you look in somebody's eyes that you've listened to on the phone bridge or you've sat with in meetings and you're telling each other how beautiful you are and you love each other and you really mean it. I never had that experience with my mother. I did on the phone, but I didn't ever have that experience, right? But I had access to her for 6 months. But here's the miracle, and I just got this about 3 months ago. This is the healing that's possible here. When I do a four-step, I've then created an eight-step list, and then I get into the business of doing the work of a nine-step, whatever my sponsor directs me to do. Because again, we have, you know, from page 76 to 84, it's telling you all about what nine-step is. It gives you lots of ideas and things, but the reality is you're dependent on quality sponsorship in terms of the direction with a ninth step. But what I got was, despite the fact I had gotten a diagnosis and my mother couldn't be there for me, I got to tell my mother that I would do whatever she needed and I would be there for her. There was no punishment. You know what I mean? It was like, you didn't do for me. Good luck with that, feeling those feelings things. Good luck with that, right? There was none of that. I got to be there for her. In the same way, nobody in my family will be punished because they didn't show up for my wedding, right? Nobody's going to be punished. There's nothing to punish. We're all doing the best we could do. That's why I have such an easy time when I sponsor chronic slippers, because I so understand people who are not done. Let's just find something to do. What I don't do is say, well, I'm sorry, I can't help you. You're not putting down the food. Good luck, right? But we also got to show up and do some work, but that's another conversation. But at any rate, this was the miracle. This is what's possible if I will really take the direction here. And again, if I'm paying attention to the primary source material, it says, if people have hurt you and you haven't forgiven them, that's what you clean up in a ninth step. And these are the kind of gifts I got, right? I've been blessed with good health. Is that an accident? I don't think so, right? I believe there's a spiritual component behind any diagnosis. Eating disorder, alcoholism, MS, diabetes, you name it. There's a spiritual component, right? Well, there's nothing higher spiritually than the love and forgiveness and service, coincidentally, which is the only thing that we do here, really, right? So I have the experience of my good health. I've been able to get married. It took me a long time. We had a 9.5-year engagement, my husband and me, right? It was a long engagement. People would say, gosh, that's a long engagement. Why the long engagement? I'd say, well, I'm afraid. They say, what are you afraid of? I'd say, what do you got? Right? I'm afraid of all of it. But I was able to finally get married, right? I got to be there for my mother and tell her that I would hold her hand and walk through with whatever she needed. I would fly home, right? I got to do that for my mother, despite the fact my mother never did that for me, ever. But it doesn't matter. Why? She didn't have it in her bag. She was crocheting an afghan, and I wanted her to build me a table. She didn't have it in her bag. And we've probably all had that experience when somebody wants something from us that we're just not in a position to give. That doesn't feel good for them either. You know, this is the kind of softening that happens when I do this work, right? So that we've just got about 16, 17 minutes. I want to open it up in case we have any questions, and I'm, you know, happy to weigh in and give you my two cents, or if anybody else in the room has some experience or insight with something. But yeah, just want to open it up and just remind you that if you, and you'd borrowed my pen, my love, can I actually have that pen back? Did somebody come up and grab this pen at one point? Oh, my love, if you would, thank you. Right? She's like, see? She's like, but I forgive you because I don't want to put you on a four-step. Right? 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 Very good. All right, my love. Very good. So, yep, just sign your name if you're going to ask a question, and then I guess you I don't know if you give your name. I'm not sure. There wasn't a lot of direction in this regard. But I'm not going to hold a resentment about that, right? Okay. So does anybody have any questions or anything that they wanted to throw out or anything? Anybody kind of struggling with anything in terms of four-step, nine-step stuff? Great.
Oh, hi, Tay, Natay, compulsive eater.
Hey, Natay.
And I just want to say thank you for your share. Mm. I resonated on so many different levels of wanting something that from my parents that they just couldn't give. And, you know, about I've been in the program about 78 days, 76 days now. And
bless your heart.
Right before I found out about the program, I had this whole, like, forgiveness session with my parents at the beach out here. And well, not even at the beach. Yeah, the whole day, the whole weekend, Easter weekend. And it came to me then about forgiving people for they know not what they do. Like, they really don't. But even still, I was still in the victim role a lot about just what everybody has done to me. And it really resonated with me when you said, you know, people, you know, sometimes they're fearful, they're dishonest or they're selfish or whatever, but I have been that too. And this whole weekend, I mean, I got to redo my fourth step inventory because I have a lot more resentments that I didn't even still realize that I had because I had been dishonest to myself a lot and not having boundaries or being selfish or, you know, just seeing my part in a lot of things and not being the victim anymore, just having a new, I always thought I was compassionate, but I was compassionate with other people's stuff that didn't affect me, that didn't hurt me, but being compassionate, like I've done those things where, you know, you write it down, the symbolism of writing it down or burning it up or, you know, I'm a self-help junkie a little bit, but again, I was in the food, so I couldn't, it only went so far. But when you said even saying something nice, like even like a best friend I had been, well, an old best friend who, after my family went through this tragedy, she told me she couldn't be my friend anymore. And that she didn't know, like it was just like my first dealing with rejection and abandonment. And, you know, I realized just now she was fearful, you know? And she didn't know how to be there for me, you know? And we have like, it's crazy, we have all the same friends on Facebook because it's high school. And, like, she'll like other people's stuff. Like, we're on the same thing. And I'm like, she's never in 16 years reached out to me. And I was like, she can't even say sorry. Like, I'm just angry. Just, you know, her name always comes up. One of my friends, when it's not in the program, but knew I was doing this program. She was like, I think that this girl, you're going to have to, something with her, something there. But, you know, I realized for 16 years I've carried that abandonment and this anger and this resentment. And it's like I was wanting something for her that she just didn't know how to do. She couldn't. She didn't know how to, you know? And I just put that together to have that, like, that peace, you know? Because there were good things when we did have our friendship. And then after that, she didn't know what to do. Or even with my parents, like, they're Nigerian. They don't talk. You know, I remember, you know, my mom, and when I finally, because I was so angry, like, why can't you, you know, they're supportive and everything, and if it's some money, like, not that they throw money and stuff, but that's what they know how to do. They're fixers. They can come in and fix. You tell them the problem, you fix. But if I cry with my mom, I didn't realize how much it makes her upset. Like, she was like, I can't deal with crying. She doesn't know what to do. So it was, and I'm like, and I used to be just mad because I want to cry and cry on my mom's lap. But she doesn't. She's just like, well, you know, how can I help you? Like, what can I do to fix it? Yeah. Do you need money for it? Is it an investment? You know, I wish I had somebody to call. Like, she's always saying that about my career. I wish I knew some people that I could just call for you. And I'm like, I just want to vent and be in my mom's arm. But I have to even let that go because I have a great mom and she's doing the best she can. So this whole weekend is just helping me with compassion and just being at peace with people because they're really doing the best they can and they can't give me what they don't have. Yep. And it's fearful, and I've not been there for people. You know, like, I'm one of those people because I don't know how to, I don't deal with death well. That's where my stuff came from. So when people have people close to them that die, I don't know what to do. Do I call, you know, do I call, do I not call? You know, I wouldn't even go to funerals. So it's been friends. I can't even sit with you there because I don't, you know. So just thank you for that, and I'm going to redo my fourth step because I have a lot of stuff that's bubbled up this weekend and literally seeing my part and seeing the compassion, forgive everybody for everything all the time because it's one of those things, and I definitely have all three of those things that I've done. So thank you. I just really appreciated your share. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your beautiful share. Oh, my Lord, what a beautiful... That was a really beautiful share. That was so lovely. So lovely. Well, you certainly came up with your own solution, kiddo. You got it, right. You know, you want to get free? Just to let people be. Just let them be. Really let them be. If they're not giving you what you want, they don't have it to give. And if you think that they have it to give, but they're not giving it, here's a little thing, a little newsflash. That's even more pain. Because I know I've certainly had that experience, right? I'm in an argument with my husband, and I know that he's right. And all I have to do is say, you're right. And I won't give it to him. That's more painful than not having it in your bag, right? They're never winning. If you want something and somebody can't give it to you, be okay with that. And do whatever you have to do to get yourself okay with that. Because they either don't have it, or they have it, and they can't give it. Neither feels good. What a beautiful, beautiful share. I had, at my church, I go to this wonderful church, and this was, she's deceased now, the daughter of Martin Luther King Jr., but she had come to our church, and she was saying that she remembered when she was a little girl, I forget the ages, it was at some point in the 60s, it was when all the horrendous stuff was going on, toward African Americans, and she said she crawled into her daddy's lap, and she said, "Daddy, how do you do it? How do you forgive those people? How do you forgive all those people that are doing those terrible things to you? How do you do that? How do you forgive them?" And she said she remembers he patted her cheek, and he said, "Oh, baby," he said, "it's not always about forgiveness. Most times it's just about patience. I'm just patient with them. They don't see it yet. They don't see the truth yet. So I'm just going to be patient with them and trust that they're going to catch this later. I'll be patient." He said, "That's what I'm good at. Forgiveness," he said, I struggle with that, just like anybody," said. "But I seem to have a pretty easy time being patient. For they know not what they do," type of thing. You know what I mean? So, beautiful. Anybody else want to share anything? Yeah, it's nice when we get a... Oh, good. My sweet Susie. And I'm going to... Shall I just sign you on the list, my sweet Susie? I will do that.
I'm Suzanne, grateful compulsive eater.
Hi, Suzanne.
And thank you, Sheila, for the workshop. and getting a lot out of it. My very first sponsor when I was working the steps the first time, another associated program, she kept telling me, dig deeper, scratch deeper. You resent and hate your mother. And I said, I really don't. And she said, no, there's something there. You have to go deeper. Well, she was close. She wasn't right, but she was close. You know, it was against my mother's mother and all the damage that my grandmother had done. So working this program, you know, I had forgiven my grandmother. It took a while, you know, very abusive physically towards me, more so emotionally. I think her motto in life was divide and conquer. My mom had 5 siblings. None of them speak to each other. I even have twin aunts that don't speak to each other. So grandmother did a good job at that. So in my evolution here, my journey, I have forgiven her and, you know, realized she didn't have all the tools in her toolbox, right? So I forgave her, and I can see and acknowledge her virtues, her attributes, and I can even see that some of those she had, I have, the good ones. I would admit to the bad ones anyway. But it wasn't until that I wrote a letter to my brother about amends that I owed him, but also forgiving him for turning his back on my mother and me, more so my mother, because my mother never got to know her grandchildren, and I don't have any children. And I wrote, you know, at first I thought, oh, this is not going to be a great letter, so I have to record it. So I recorded it, and it was actually a very, very well thought out letter. And I had to thank him, because the brother that I had as a little girl was exactly the brother that I needed. And that's the brother that I still love today. Aww. I don't know the man that he is. Sometimes I'm sad, but I can't do anything about that. But after I wrote the letter, my thoughts about my grandmother got better. It was like by making amends to him, to what I had done, but also forgiving him, it was kind of like full circle. I was able to really forgive my grandmother on a deeper level that I didn't even know was still there, and have love for her and compassion that I didn't know existed. And that's what working the steps here do. You know, the columns are great. Our questions are really pointed. And I think together, it really gets to the nitty gritty. And I took the direction from my sponsor to write this letter. And I didn't have to mail it to him. But I did do the letter, and it really set me free. So it is true, the truth shall set you free. So I encourage everybody, if you haven't done a fourth step recently, oh, I've already done one, do another one. More shall be revealed. Thank you, Sheila. I love you.
Thank you, Susie. It's just beautiful. Really beautiful. Yeah, I've heard you tell that story. I love it. Great. We have somebody. Yes, we certainly here, right here, my love. We certainly have time. We do indeed. We have 5 minutes. Thank you. Beautiful shares. Beautiful shares.
Hi, my name is Margaret. Excuse me. I'm a very grateful compulsive overeater.
Hey, Margaret.
And I don't think it's a coincidence. Last night when I looked at the 3 workshops that were offered, my first choice was the gratitude one. And this morning when I was walking from breakfast.
I'm sure it's back.
No, yeah. And we were walking. I was with 2 friends, and she read the list again. And I thought, you know, I think I'm more curious about what if it's 4-step through the 9th or how to get to the 9th. I can't remember how it was worded. And for me, that's it's not a coincidence, but I had a really hard time doing my very first 4-step. Okay, let me just tell you, I'm 20 years sober.
Bravo.
I'm 16 years in this program and a recommitted abstinence of 357 days.
Bravo.
Yeah.
Bravo.
And I can't thank you enough. The history for me is I was afraid I was going to look bad if I did a 4-step. I know somebody that's in other programs understands that. I also go to the family program, too. I'm multiply blessed, is what I say.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've done many 4-steps. And the most recent, I just did the See How inventory. And what's interesting is the sponsor I had this time was it's the first time that she actually read to me after each increment the character defects that she got, which is what my first sponsor in AA did, was we went over the character defects in my fifth step, and we did my eighth step list. But no one has ever seen it the way you explained it, to me, anyway. It's always been, my part has always been, how have I been selfish, self-centered, fearful in regards to other people? About forgiveness. I've heard people that have put their name at the top of their list. I didn't do that. For me, learning how to forgive has been about more about forgiving other people, and then I've learned how to forgive myself. I don't know how to explain that, but that's kind of how it worked. But when you were sharing your story, it brought up so much, and I could see that that was the missing piece, why I still have, there's residual anger from my ex-husband, who's the father of my children. He was, you know, an absentee dad, even when we were married. But afterwards, he never paid child support. He never stayed in touch with the kids, blah, blah, blah. And even though I wrote a letter and made my amends for being an awful wife because I was drunk and loaded, that didn't take away what you talked about, you know, and there's many others. But one of the things I did want to share that was really interesting is that I went to the San Juan Capistrano retreat a few years in a row when it was happening.
Yeah.
And there was a member who did a workshop on a Joe and Charlie fourth step, big book style. And he freed me up in a moment's time because I had this resentment about my father, because my father had said a couple of things to me that impacted my whole life. One was, he said I had stovepipe legs, which meant I was unattractive. That's what I believed. He said I wasn't college material, which made me believe I was stupid. And I carried that with me my whole life, from a child into adulthood. So we did this little fourth step, we did the columns, and he said, just choose one person, institution, place, whatever. And I chose my dad. And when it got to the place of what was my part, I said to him, I raised my hand, I said, how was I, you know, where was, how did I start that ball rolling? And he said, you believed it. It set me free. I was like, wow. So I love that, because you really touched on that too. It's you know, beautiful. It's about being free from all that. And so anyway, thank you. This was, I'm so glad I had a change of mind. I think it was a change of heart.
Beautiful. Thank you. I'm grateful for that too. Wow. You know what? And that's probably all the time we have. So that we've got our time before we get to go in for that big speaker. But I just want to thank everybody. And, you know, what a wonderful gift it is. We get to just give each other, and we get to just learn and keep turning around and giving it to somebody. But I'll just close, and I'll tell you this, that I have two sisters. I'm the youngest of five. Again, my oldest brother's deceased. But I have two sisters who have been feuding for 10 years since my mother died, because one of them got the ring, right? My mother's wedding ring, engagement ring. And the other one is sure she was supposed to get it. And they literally have not spoken. And now the relationship, as far as both of them are concerned, because I, of course, have relationships with both of them because I refuse to participate, right? If I had 10 grand, I would put it in the one sister's hand while the other one was standing right there and saying, can we be over this now? Can we be over it now? Right? But and the reality is I do have 10 grand, and I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to fix that for them. There's no fixing it. Why? It's not about the ring anyway. It's about somebody not being okay with somebody else being who they are and how they are. It's over. I grew up in the home, and those days are over. They are just over. And to witness two sisters who will not talk, right, because they can't forgive each other, this is not what I want. This is not what I want, right? The transformation that happened to my body is the least interesting transformation that happened to me in CEA Howe. It's about the forgiveness and the love and who gets to give more. That great woman I told you about, Linda, when I came in and I complained one time about my husband and I being in an argument, and, you know, we argue all the time. We were engaged at the time, but I said, I can't marry him. We argue all the time. And she said, well, I got a solution for you on that. She said, the next time you guys are in an argument, you know who wins? You want to win the argument? I said, of course I want to win. People will always say, would you rather be right or happy? I'm like, I'd rather be right, quite frankly. But she said, you want to win the argument? You know how you win? And I said, how? She said, be the one who forgives first. She said, delegate a chair in your living room, and whoever is forgiving first, they go sit in the chair. She said, that's who wins. That's the way to win an argument. Forgive. Let them go. Surrender. We get to do that here. 4-step, 8-step list, and then do that concrete work, right? Act as if. Act your way into right thinking. This is a behavioral program first before it's a cognitive one. Do the behavior and watch your thinking change and watch your life change. This is what's possible if we surrender. Take a third step. It's all about third step. Thank you. Let's get together. Should we do it in a circle? We'll do the serenity prayer. Great. Thank you. Applause for all of us. Well done.
Coming back, it's work.